Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tribal Wisdom Radio, your marriage support network. Tune in for all things love, marriage, and family. We are devoted to love. Here we go.
Here we go, indeed, indeed. We are talking marriage matters. This is our actual final show for 2014. This is our final live show. We will be playing our other shows throughout the rest of the week so that you can get a reminder of what we did for 2014. But tonight, we had a wonderful, wonderful Twitter chat with our special panelists. I hope that they call in so they can introduce themselves because you need to know these guys. But we're talking marriage and money, marriage matters here on Tribal Wisdom tonight. I am your host, Cynthia Williamston. My special host tonight is Rochelle Smith. Rochelle Smith is coming tonight to drop some more gems, more than she dropped on Twitter tonight. And I guess we're going to discuss some of the things that we discussed because I know I have some questions. Rochelle is a certified financial planner. She is the owner of Ames Financial Education and Consulting. We're talking tonight about five things that couples need to discuss when it comes to money and marriage. Very important stuff. Toward the end of the show, I definitely want you to go and get her ebook. Her ebook is just $2.99 about personal finance, but I'm sure I won't have to convince you because you're going to hear what she has to say tonight, and I'm not even going to hold it up. Rochelle, let's see. Rochelle, are you there? Hold on. Rochelle, are you there?
Hi, Cynthia. I'm here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. What a wonderful Twitter chat tonight.
I enjoyed myself. You guys were like serious. You were dropping some stuff.
Well, when you talk about marriage and money, you can only be serious because I think for the longest it's been kind of a joke, and that has gotten a divorce rate over 50%. So it is a serious topic.
I can't wait to discuss some of the gems that you guys really dropped tonight because there were a couple of things that I hadn't even thought of. I don't even know where to start. I usually know where to start, but this was something. This is something to really to ponder.
It's good. Good stuff.
Yeah. You know what? I definitely have to go straight for what you said about there being three transitions. One of the difficulties of really discussing marriage and money or money within your marriage is that we don't acknowledge that there are three transitions that we go through when we're talking about money. You said being single, being engaged, and then being married. I don't think that we slow down our thinking enough to realize that those are serious transitions.
They are very serious transitions. And for those who chatted with us tonight, there were quite a few on that were single. And especially if you're single for a long time, you get kind of set in your ways with regards to how you're going to save or spend your money. And then here comes your knight in shining armor sweeping you off your feet and getting engaged. And that in itself is a transition because, for one, if you're going from being single to engaged, what comes with an engagement? For many of us, it may be that big wedding or, you know, a long courtship or having some sort of domestic partnership where you live together. That is a transition in itself. That looks very different than being single. And then you get into the marriage. And marriage supposedly is that commitment where the two become one. And when you become one, then you talk about, okay, well, what happens if one of us passes away? Or what happens when children come into the relationship? So then that, again, looks a lot different than a typical engagement.
Another thing that I believe Kamari brought up was that what if there are children before the marriage?
That's a great point. Some people come in with children on their own, right? So you may have children before, let's just say we have, you know, a young lady that has a son and maybe a gentleman that has two children. Are there child support issues? How old are the children? Are you all going to decide to start to save for college together? What about this? If you move into a home with a gentleman and it's his home and something happens to you, where do your children go? Where do they live? So that brings up a whole new level of issues.
You know, I have to say this. I have a friend who dealt with the very issue that you're speaking about. She married, she asked the questions beforehand. They got married, they were living, you know, wonderfully, and then boom, when I think income tax came, I think 9 children were claimed and she only knew about 2.
Oh. Now, listen, that's a trust issue, Cynthia. I think we're done with money now. That becomes a trust issue, and that's a totally different ballgame. That is a trust issue, and obviously there is some deception there, which money is not even the issue at that point. The only part of that statement that you just made was the income taxes and who claims. The only part of money that's an issue. The other part of that obviously has to do with trust.
Yes. I mean, it's just because you brought that up about the children, where will they live? Someone brought up insurance. I'm really all abuzz with so many different questions. I'm usually not this scattered as a host. But you were so right.
Good.
Yes. The topic, the Twitter chat was really so very interesting. You guys have me thinking about so many things. I'm trying to follow just the questions we talked about, but I'm like, whoa, I have to slow my own thinking down and try to, let's get to it. Let's talk about it. Let's discuss this. The first thing was, how do we really approach the subject of money before marriage? What do you talk about? How do you bring that subject up to your intended?
I would say that you have to feel or know that you are in a serious, committed relationship. That's you certainly don't want to have a conversation with your finances with someone that you're just casually dating. But if you see that the scenario or the situation is going to go a lot farther, and you feel like you are committed to the relationship and that you are going to have a future together, then money needs to come up early on. And I'm not saying that it has to be a deep conversation early on, but you have to start talking about it. When you start talking about who's going to live where and those types of things, then money absolutely has to be discussed. And what I would say is, just like you go to a pastor or a marriage counselor before you get married, I would add a third person in there, and I would add that third person as a certified financial planner, someone like myself who has an objective opinion, because I'm not engaged. I'm not, you know, in the marriage. I'm on the outside, or I'm not part of the engagement. I'm on the outside looking in, and what I like to look at is behavior, because when it comes to money, 80% of how you handle your money is behavior. The other 20% is the transactional part. So I want to understand what your behavior is. If you all have an emergency, what are you going to do? Are you going to be okay with handling that with a credit card, or will you have an emergency fund saved up because you know things like this are going to happen?
All right.
Really got your brain spinning right there.
It really did. I'm spinning from the whole conversation, because even though I've known that this is a serious topic, and I've known have actually witnessed marriages break or fall apart, not that they didn't get back together, but the falling apart over issues with money was really ugly. It got very ugly. So for you to say that 80% of it is about behavior, I've not heard it that way before. That's such an important point that you make, that we really have to ask or watch our intended behavior before and after marriage in order to determine, I suppose, who's going to be handling the finances.
Yeah, and I would give this example, and this is one of the things that I talk about in my ebook, Knowing Your Money Attitude. When you take that stroll through the mall, when you are window shopping or when you're going in for one thing, and out the corner of your eye you see a pair of shoes and it has a sale sign and you love those shoes, will you be rational or will you be impulsive? An impulsive person who has an impulsive behavior is going to say, hey, those shoes are on sale. They have my size. You don't know if you have the money or not, but your behavior says, I'm impulsive, I'm going to grab those shoes. Or you will take on a more of a rational viewpoint and say, you know what, those shoes are on sale. I'm going to go home, and I'm going to wait 24 to 48 hours. And if I still feel like I need those shoes or I want those shoes and I have the money for it, then I'll go back and buy them. Majority of the time, you will get the answer in 24 to 48 hours, and your answer will be, I don't need those shoes. I don't need those shoes.
Okay. Now, I need to bring up that every time I have a financial manager on the show, they automatically start attacking the shoes. And I take issue with this. I just want to put that out there, that I take issue with this. This is the first thing you always go for, as if you're trying to get my business. You know that you're talking to me.
Well, let me just let you in on a little secret. It's probably because we have had to learn that. That's the first thing.
Yes.
Shoes are a problem. Shoes are a problem across the board. It doesn't matter.
Yes. I was going to say that, you know, we always have a stash for shoes, so there's no need to blow the budget for shoes because we keep a shoe stash. Can we agree on that so that we don't have to attack the shoes anymore?
Let's just agree that we have, like, more than enough black pairs of shoes. And so when we go in and buy another black pair of shoes, it's just to buy them and to put them on the shelf, because once we buy them, if you take a look at all of the black shoes you wear that you wore in 2014, you probably wore the same pair a lot of those days. And those other black pair that were stashed away, we barely touched them. But hey, you have to have your stash.
Okay, all right. It makes me have your stash. I just need it because, you know, sometimes you need different size heels. You know, sometimes you have to throw the gelins in there to make it comfortable.
But there's that one or two pair that always work. They work almost every time. You probably could get away with those one or two pair.
All right. You know what? We're getting off topic. Let's get back on it. Because I'm feeling hurt, so I'm not. I'm not gonna do it. I'm feeling a little hurt. But another thing that you guys brought up, which was great, two or three of you were saying the same thing about setting goals. What was the other thing? Oh, I have to scroll through what we were talking about. You mentioned behavior, but we said setting goals. Oh, having respect for money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that is a topic that comes up even in most households before children move forward into relationships. Are people having discussions about how they should respect money as a single person so that they know how to manage it when they are in a relationship?
Well, I come across the majority of the people that I work with are couples or singles who are, let's say, you know, late 30s on up. And I feel like much of our behavior about money is learned behavior. So a lot of us learn it from our parents. And if our parents were, you know, if we had a lifestyle that was very tough, you know, let's say our parents didn't have much. We can go one or two ways. When we're adults, we can make a lot of money and we can hoard it, just keep it because we never had it. So we just hoard money, we keep it, and we tuck it away. The other way that people go is because they never had it, they spend and they splurge a lot because they're trying to live a life that's different from their parents. So much of how you are when you're single has to do with how you grew up. Now, some people obviously outgrow that and they learn because they, you know, get around different people and they learn different behaviors through college or employment or from other people. But a great percentage of how you handle money, your behavior as a single person, you could probably trace that back to your childhood to some extent.
All right. So that has to be addressed. And I want you to repeat what you said about the three people that you should see when you're having marriage counseling, a financial planner. You mentioned another one. What was it?
Well, you had mentioned when people, before they get married, they go to marriage counselors or like pastors. Some people do it through their church.
Okay.
And I said mentioned a financial planner.
Yes. Okay. So I'm definitely dropping that gem in the event tonight about also sitting with a financial planner so that you are able to learn to set goals if you don't know how. Can we go ahead and discuss goals? How do you start goal setting as a single person just before you get married? Because, you know, you have to have a husband's or a wife's mindset. I always hear that you don't become a wife or a husband the moment you say I do. You've already been kind of living that life and having that mindset. So how do you begin to set goals for your marriage?
Yeah, I when you go to a professional like a certified financial planner, they will, you know, walk you through the process. But part of my process is not to belittle or minimize any one person's goals. So let's say, you know, the female spouse or the spouse, spouse one has a set of goals, spouse two has a set of goals. You want to find that common area first because maybe both of you feel like you should have 6 months built up into a bank account, you know, in the event that something big happens that, you know, is out of the norm. You both will agree on that. So you're going to have a list of goals that you both are probably going to agree on. Because you're a couple, you probably agree on some things. And then you all may have your individual goals. And I always say don't disrespect each other's individual goals, but just see how you can combine the individual goals with the goals of a couple. So, for example, maybe the wife wants to go back and take a few classes. That certainly may not be the goal of the husband, right? That's kind of an individual goal. But you have to find out how the expense, the tuition, the books are going to work into the goal or the budget as a couple.
Okay. And I'm reading something that Kamari said. He said, the major key to money management in marriage is being on the same page, which is in line with what you're saying. And he also says a major key to money management in marriage is understanding your partner's relationship with money. Does that go back to behavior again?
That goes back to money attitude, money behavior. In the book, I call it your money attitude, but that is money attitude, money behavior, your relationship with money. All of that, I believe, is synonymous.
All right. Well, let's move on. There's something that Ronika said. Ronika Gillen, Moody. I don't know why she put Moody, but that's what I'm going to say. If you're on Twitter, you wanna follow all of our panelists, just put in the hashtag MarriageChatBT and you will find everyone who was in on that conversation. Ronika said something interesting. First, she said that her mom taught her that women usually have to manage the money and men usually just go ahead and agree with it. Is this true? Is this the majority of marriages?
You know, I will say this. I have been in the, and this is what I mentioned to her, in the financial industry for 17 years. Mm-hmm. And I've had the privilege of working with clients who have $1 million or more. I work with men. I did not work with a lot of women, which mm-hmm. is why my focus today is geared towards women, because I feel like women certainly take care of the day-to-day transactions. They make sure the bills are paid. They make sure the bill pay is set up. They make sure things don't get behind. They pay for the groceries. They do the day-to-day stuff. But when it comes to investing for the long term, pumping up your 401ks, focusing on retirement, the majority, when you look at the majority of couples, the husband's 401k retirement plan is going to be larger, and in some cases significantly larger than the wife's, because they are focused on a longer term, bigger picture retirement, and they don't get bogged down in the day-to-day stuff.
Okay. I guess I don't know how to receive that just yet. Because, no, I agree with you that women do normally handle the day-to-day, and I guess you would know men do most of the investing. How can we change that behavior?
What we need to keep in mind is the problem that I ran into all the time, and it's very simple. If we live a normal life with whatever, you know, age is considered normal, statistically, men pass away first.
Mm-hmm.
That's the statistic. Unless there's something, excuse me, very wrong with the wife, statistically, men pass away first. If you think about that, if you have absolutely nothing to do with the investing, you have nothing to do with the retirement account, you don't know about your net worth, you don't know a lot about the large liabilities that you have, when your husband passes away before you, what do you do?
Yes. You would have to find someone else to manage the money for you, and you won't be as knowledgeable.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know where anything is. That's what happens a lot of times. You really don't know how much you have. You have to search and look for accounts because it's in a folder or a drawer somewhere that you don't know about, that you never really looked at. You know that you have life insurance, but you're not sure if you ever changed the beneficiary or if it's the same. And so there are about 10 people that you have to call to gather this information. And in that same time period, you have to find time to grieve. That's not a good mix, because
no.
Who comes in? Vultures. Vultures
yes.
come in and they take over and you don't even see them coming.
Yes. I've witnessed that a lot of times as well. Now, I have a serious question. If men did more shoe shopping, would they live longer?
Is that serious? I think they shop. They just spend a lot more on shoes than we do, don't you think? Typically, when they go in, they don't bargain shop. They go in, they know what they want. They don't feel like we feel, we touch.
Yes.
They know what they want. They try it on. If they can wear it, they don't care how much it costs. They just buy it and they come out.
This is true. This is true. I do get complaints about why my styling goes. So I'm opening myself up to getting hit now. So I'm going to get off that subject really quick again and
yes,
say that.
I hear you.
Somebody
I hear you.
In the group said money issues exist due to a lack of communication as well as new information connected to a vision.
That's good. That's good.
What are your thoughts on this?
The key is what I wrote in the article that we talked about, and that's number 5, communicate, communicate, communicate. There is no such thing as over-communicating when it comes to money. There is a such thing as a wrong timing to have a money conversation. That's a very serious thing. But there is no such thing as over-communicating. And I go back to working with the financial planner, not to toot my own horn, but to have someone there to make sure that you all are accountable and to make sure that you're on track. Because once you have somebody work with you on your financial plan, you have to meet with that person about once a year to make sure that you're on track, to make sure the vision is still the same, to make sure things haven't changed. Because maybe you don't leave your job, but your job leaves you. Maybe, you know, the company shuts down. Well, that's a different scenario, and that could change your vision or change your goals. So you have to go back to, one, communicating, and two, making sure that someone is there for accountability. You have to have an accountability partner.
Wow. When you said that, especially when your job leaves you, then mm-hmm. enters the levels of stress.
It enters the level of stress, and not only just physical stress, but of course money. Because, and I always tell people this, do you have insurance? They ask you, do you have insurance? Yeah, I have insurance at my job. I think that's great, because usually when you can buy life insurance through your employer, usually it's a lot cheaper. But what if your job leaves you? And if your job leaves you, sometimes that means your benefits leave you, which leaves you with no life insurance. So it's not good enough just to have life insurance through your employer.
Unless it's insurance that is portable, meaning if they leave you or you leave them, you can still keep that insurance.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Something else someone said, the finance coach. He said, in my opinion, money is the most taboo subject. Who wants to bring up the extra debt they have looming from their past? It's tough. Why, you know, I think that there are a lot of tough subjects or topics that you can discuss with your spouse. Money, how, you know, where does money fall with that? Does that also depend on, you know, your own personal feelings about money? Because I would prefer to be upfront about it. I don't think it's a big deal. Money is, in my opinion, the easiest thing to replace. You can't replace a limb. You know, mm-hmm. you have to really work hard to replace your health. All kinds of things, but money, in my opinion, is one of the easiest things to replace. Why is it such a taboo subject?
You know, my response to him was short and sweet. My response to Mr. Finance was, who wants to talk about debt? And I said, you have a choice. You can talk about the D word. It's either the D word debt or the D word divorce. One of those needs to come up, because if you don't talk about debt, you're going to be talking about divorce. So you have to address the D word. And we want to avoid the D word, because that's the issue in society today. We have over 50% divorce rate, and the majority, you know, the number one contributor, as we've talked about, is money. So choose which D word you want to talk about. And I'm going to say it has to be the debt. And that has to come up very early. I know that it doesn't roll off the tongue easily, because if you have mounting debt, then and the other person is in a good position, then that's a choice they have to make. Do I want to be in a relationship with someone who has this mounting debt? And there's a couple of things that you can look at. Well, is this person trying to work on getting out of debt, and how can I help them with their behavior, with our behavior as a couple, so that they do get out of debt? Or is this person just, you know, going to continue to pile on that debt? Then you have to take a step back and say, is this a relationship that I want to be in, because it's doomed from the very beginning? So as I said to him, you have to choose the D word, either debt or divorce.
All right. Ronika says, me and my husband discuss finances every week at least. He makes sure the bills are paid so that we can have date night. How often should couples, is once a week good to discuss the finances, every couple of days, or does it depend on the couple?
I would say that it depends on the couple. If they discuss once a week, then they are very good. I recommend that my clients have money date night, and that's once a month, because you want to, you know, see what you all have done over over the month, again, to make sure that you're on track, to make sure that you're staying in line with the goals that you have. If you go over budget 1 month, then that means you need to pull back the next month. If they're doing it every week, then I think that's great, but that's way above what the average couple is doing.
Excellent. Yeah, Ronika, you got it going on, girl. You and your husband got it going on.
Yes, absolutely have it going on.
Excellent. Okay. I know at some point I'm coming, you know, I'm bringing the buzz down, but I'm still buzzing, and actually the chat is still going on while we're on air, which I absolutely love.
Amazing.
Yes. Yes.
It's a hot topic.
Yes, it really is a hot topic. I didn't realize how hot it was. And I think you put it so very eloquently when you said you have to discuss one of the D words. If you're not talking about debt, you will be talking about divorce, because mm-hmm. The lack of communication will bring undue stress. You won't be able to set goals together. You know, if we go over the reasons why not talking about money, marriage, and finance doesn't work out, what are the reasons?
Why it doesn't work out? Well, one, the reasons that I've listed that are the most common, that the two don't merge together well, is one, is that we talk about finances too late. Instead of talking about it, you know, when you get married or during the marriage, it's a conversation that should come up early. Two, avoiding the conversation altogether. I mentioned that having monthly date nights to discuss money, that is part of what has to be part of a disciplined strategy. Three, you have to respect each other's money skills. If you don't respect the other person's money skills, then you belittle what they bring to the relationship. As I said before, one may be good at day-to-day things, the other may be good at the investing and other things. So that would be another way to, you know, head in the wrong direction if you're not respecting what the other person brings to the table. And then four, a big thing that was mentioned in our Twitter chat is knowing ahead of time how you will establish your accounts. And a lot of couples that I advise them, each person, certainly if you want to set up an individual account to have your, you know, fund money or whatever, then that's great. But there has to be a joint account or something where the two of you come together and put something in the pot, especially if both people are working and are contributing. And then the fifth and final way to make sure that marriage and finances merge is to communicate. There's just no way around that. Avoiding the conversation is not gonna help the relationship. It's only going to harm it.
All right. The other hot topic word that came up, we talked about respect, we talked about goals. Did we discuss accountability? Because those three words, it was like simultaneous, where you were saying respect, Kamari was saying accountability, Ronika was saying mm-hmm. goals, and, you know, my mind was completely blown at that point because cause I'm like, okay, all right, you're dropping it too fast. It's coming too fast.
Uh-huh.
It's happening too fast. When it comes to accountability, how do couples come together or agree upon how they will be accountable for how they spend the money?
So it all boils down to cash flow. Cash flow. It all boils down to cash flow, and it all has to come to some sort of agreement on a budget. And it has to be a budget that I call an achievable budget. It should not be a budget that is going to make you angry, because a lot of times when people hear the word budget, it has a negative connotation because you feel like someone is going to handcuff you or it's telling you what you can't do. actually a budget is showing you what you can do. And so you have to look at a budget in a positive way. And you have to agree on how your cash flow will go and how you will manage your cash flow. So it boils down to agreeing on that budget. And when you have your monthly date night, or when you or in some cases, I think it was Kamari, your weekly date night that you talk about money, you're held accountable. And your other accountability partner is going to be that objective person, your financial planner or your financial coach, who's going to make sure that you are staying on track and you are working towards the goals that you all sat down and set together.
All right. I'm going to need a serious nap when this is over.
You said a nap. A serious nap.
I'm going to need a nap. I was not prepared, and I thought I was because I studied finance, and I've had this conversation before, but maybe because I'm just having it again, it's been a while since I've had the conversation where I'm like, mm-hmm. whoa, you know, this is a really heavy topic. One of the things that I guess we didn't touch on, we just touched on a little bit, was how do we establish how you will set up your accounts? That was your number four.
Mm-hmm. Meaning, how do you determine if there will be a single account or joint account or three? Is that the question?
Yeah. I mean, do most couples have a joint account as well as a separate account? Or do the majority of couples have just a joint account?
I say that it does depend on the couple. And I'm going to give just a little disclaimer here. When people go through marriage counseling, a lot of times at church, they're going to say two becomes one. What's hers is his, what's his is hers. There should be one account. That's what people are going to learn a lot of times when they go through church. And I respect that, and I think that that will work for some couples, especially for younger couples. It could really work. But let's just say you're on your second marriage and you've been in working for 30 years and you have a large pension and you save very well in just, you know, an investment account. It's going to be very hard for you to come into that second marriage and say, let's put it all in one bucket. It's going to be very hard, and I've seen it many times over, that if someone is maybe not as responsible as the other, you know, has been in the past, and they come together a little later in life where the other person has really saved and has really built up a nest egg, it's a little hard for that person to just come in and say, hey, let's just go get a joint account and let's just join money forces. That's a very hard thing for some people, and a lot of times it's just not going to happen.
And you know what?
It depends on the couple.
I don't think I have much of an issue with that. I think sometimes it does work out best if a couple keeps their own separate account, especially for women. I always hear women say, I don't want to always have to go in the account and explain why I bought something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes some husbands are extremely sensitive about, you know, what you're buying. So if I want to buy a hair product or if I want to get my hair and nails done, do I need to explain that? No, I would prefer, you know.
Right.
And I can understand 100% because, like I said, I'm not explaining the shoes. At all. It's just not,
it's not going to happen, right?
It's not happening.
So that should be told up front. I'm not explaining shoes.
Michelle, believe me when I tell you I would not have a problem explaining that up front.
And, you know, the reason why I bring up counseling, marriage counseling through church is because when I had this same subject on radio before, and there was someone who does counseling at the church, and she called in and she said, hey, you know, what you're saying is not right, it's not what we teach at church, and I get that. So I don't want to disrespect that and say that that doesn't work, but I have gotten that before, and my rebuttal to that was, listen, I've had clients who are on their second marriage, like I said, and they have done very well. You're not going to get them to come into a marriage, no matter how committed and in love they are. They're probably not going to do that. So you have to agree on what's best for that particular couple. She said, well, he could have his account and he could be going out and doing things with other women that you don't know about. And I said to her, that's a different issue. That's not a money issue. That's a trust issue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Then if you're going to bring that up, then let's just go ahead and say that if you're already having trust issues before you get married,
right,
then you might want to wait a little bit. Yeah. You might want to wait just a little bit, go through a little more counseling. And if it's something that is not helping, you might want to rethink marriage until you take care of a few other personal emotional issues when it comes to trust, because trust will automatically destroy the marriage anyway.
Right, and it has nothing to do with money.
All right. You know what? I can't handle much more.
Cynthia, I thought we were ready. I thought we were going. I thought we were all on.
Man, I was not prepared. I don't know how I was not prepared. I was the one that made the suggestion. I brought up the show. And all of you hit me with some things. I'm like, I'm glad that you're all not in the same room with me right now. I'd be like, you know what? I need a cushion or something. Yes. I need a shock absorber. Because
you got to just lay down and think about it, right? Like, how do I do this? My head hurts. It's a lot to ask. And I say that, you know, there really isn't there really isn't a simple formula. There's no cookie cutter plan for any particular couple. What most financial planners will do is they'll create a customized financial plan, and it's customized to meet a particular client or couple's goals. It's not, you know, what's good for the Smiths is good for the Johnsons, because the Smiths and the Johnsons probably have very different scenarios. I mean, not to throw more into the pot, but there could be someone who is so engaged in sports that they have, you know, a $500,000 basement that has memorabilia in it. That's a totally different situation that has to be addressed, you know, when compared to a couple who's just getting started in life. So you want to get a financial planner to customize a plan that fits your goals and your needs, because there should not be a cookie cutter plan that is good for everyone.
All right. Well, okay. Let's get ready to tell people where we can find you. I want you to talk about your special deal that you have. You have your ebook for $2.99. People, did you listen to all the wisdom and knowledge that she was dropping? And for $2.99, I think you should just go ahead and invest. Make the investment.
Download it. And give it as a gift. It will be a perfect gift. And it's very straightforward. I talk about seven key essentials that every woman should know. But it's because I work with a lot of women. It's every woman. It's every man. And the first thing that we talk about is money attitudes. The last thing that I talk about actually is knowing how to negotiate, because although that's not necessarily money, it absolutely ties into how to become financially independent. And so this ebook is very short, but it's packed full of valuable information. Just like we've talked about here today, it's a book that I want to just get your head spinning and to get you thinking about how you are going to become financially independent, not, you know, trying to make you feel bad about your situation. This is about empowering you to do better. I said at the very beginning of the show that 80% of how you handle money is based on behavior. The other 20% is the transactional part. And so we have to figure out who we are, how we handle money,
and really take a look at ourselves as individuals before we can come in and look at our finances as a couple or a partner with someone else. And this ebook will bring out a lot of those things.
I'm so glad that you said I'm a big advocate of, I'm always saying you really need to get to know who you are before you get into any type of relationship, because that determines how the relationship will go. The least amount that you know about yourself, the more issues normally come up later on, because then mm-hmm. expectations are that you have to remain the way you were when you met. So
right.
I'm so very glad that you made a point of bringing up that you should get to know yourself as a financial manager as well, how you manage or your own financial behavior, your money behaviors, before getting into any deep relationship, any serious relationship, and be ready to discuss your behaviors if you are getting into a relationship. That's very important. Please tell us where we can find you. I know clearly you're on Twitter because we just had the Twitter chat.
Yes, we are on Twitter, and you can find me. I have a website. It's RecheleSmith.com. That's RecheleSmith.com. It has my contact information on there. I am at Rochelle Smith on Twitter, on Instagram, as well as on Facebook. I have, you know, believe it or not, there are a few Rochelle Smiths out there. I didn't know that. Thought I was one of only one or two. But Rochelle Smith, and I put out great tips almost on a daily basis. If during the holidays, it's not been as much, but I have been giving tips on, you know, what to do for the holidays, some frugal shopping ideas. I will be on my Facebook page in the next few days talking about things that you should be doing at the end of the year when it comes to your finances, so that you can be prepared for the beginning of the year. So you don't want to miss those very brief but good tips that I always put out on Facebook.
Great. I want you to definitely share your Facebook page in the event. I want to thank Angela Underwood. I want to thank Kamari Ellis. And I want to thank Runika Gillen. I want you guys to also share your Facebook pages in the event so that we can get people to like your pages and continue this conversation about money and marriage. Or this money and marriage conversation turned out to be more of a chat about singles and money. Which we will, I guess, we'll pick up that conversation at another time. I definitely would love to have you back on the show again. Kamari and Runika, I can't wait to have you guys on the show. I hope you're listening still. Where we can actually have all the panelists on the show at the same time, where you will once again completely blow my mind, I'm sure. And
We talked about it. I know we prepped for it a little bit. And like you say, I know you thought you were ready, but money always, as you can see, it brings out a lot of emotion. And like you said, I've taken on enough tonight, but you don't want it to bring out that ugly emotion. And that's what we want to avoid, those very ugly emotions. We want to keep those away. So we want to talk about money and how we can handle it better so that we don't have to have those ugly conversations.
All right. Well, okay. You know, I once again, I want to thank my guest, Rochelle Smith, for coming on and sharing so much of what she knows and her wisdom about money and finance. I'm so grateful that you support women in getting more knowledgeable about handling money, finance, investments, and more. This, as I said earlier, is our last live show for the year. I hope that you enjoyed it. I will be posting our previous shows for the rest and the remaining of the year, and I want you to get ready for a fired up 2015, because we have got some things planned for you guys. You won't even believe it. I can't wait to share them with you. In the meantime, as I said, join us here daily. I'll be posting the links, listening to our previous shows, chat it up in the event about some of the topics that you really enjoyed. Let us know some topics that you would like to discuss on the shows, and we look forward to seeing you in the new year. Have a wonderful holiday, a wonderful new year, and we love you as always. We're devoted to love. Good night.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Tribal Wisdom. Stop by bridaltribe.com and visit our media page for full recaps of every show, amazing articles, and free downloads. We have an ever-growing library of knowledgeable guests with vital information for any stage of your relationship. At Tribal Wisdom, we are order and excellence in action, and we are devoted to